two very important elements of the environment, which is the water and the air. And we all know that we don't breathe water, it has an effect on health, and if we don't breathe, so those are the two key elements of our talks here, which we are going to hear. As a first speaker, I would like to present Dr. Thomas Brevenslick. Thomas is a retired American living in Hong Kong and Berlin. He spent most of his career in the USA performing classical ANSYS and Neutron computer simulations of optical telescopes at Owens, Illinois, and nuclear reactors at Westinghouse. Because classical physics cannot explain experimental observations at the nanoscale, he developed the theory of QED radiation based on quantum mechanics. QED radiation is a physical to diverse areas of nanotechnology, including cancer research, molecular dynamics, cosmology, and the instant topic of disinfection of drinking water in China. I think this is a very actual topic. And with this said, I give the words to Thomas.
Thank you.
One technical remark still, please make sure that the mobile phones are switched off, as well as the famous Samsung bird. So that would be very great, and I would give a time indication about 2 minutes before before the next speaker.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Sherman.
Yes,
my name is Thomas Brevenslick. I'm an American living in Hong Kong, and the title of my talk is Nanotechnology and the Disinfection of Drinking Water in China. Now, UNICEF estimates 1 billion people worldwide do not have safe access to drinking water. Now, in China, massive population poses a challenge for 1.2 billion people, a lot of people. And over 3.5 million tons of sewage waste per day suggest that perhaps half of all Chinese, 600 million people, by drinking water are subjected to waterborne pathogens. Disinfection method. Water purifiers reduce diarrheal diseases by 30 to 40%, but fewer than 5% of Chinese homes have the purifiers, and despite costing about 2,000 renminbi. Water purifiers require electricity for pumping through the filters, and usually these are coated with silver nanoparticles. And here, NP stands for nanoparticle. Now, the silver nanoparticles provide antimicrobial action by damaging the DNA of bacteria. But if the nanoparticles come off the filter and into the water and into the body, they can damage the human DNA that is, if not repaired, may lead to cancer. You may be worse off. UV disinfection. UV disinfection of drinking water outside the body avoids the danger of cancer posed by nanoparticles in filters. And currently, LEDs and the UVC are thought to provide the future disinfection of drinking water. All you do is just irradiate the drinking water with UVC. Now, LED stands for light-emitting diodes. You probably all know this. But the LEDs still require a source of electrical power and only have an efficiency of 1 to 2% in the UVC. In the visible, they're very efficient, but not in the UVC. So, in effect, they're impractical in West Africa. Now, boiling water. In China, water is usually disinfected by boiling. Even if tap water becomes drinkable, people will still boil water because it's a habit in China. Boiling will kill or deactivate all waterborne pathogens, including protozoan cysts. They can be resistant to chemical disinfection, including viruses too small to filter out. And even if the water is turbid, you can remove the volatile organic compounds such as benzene and chloroform. But electricity to boil water is not always available, even in China. So what I think we need here is an inexpensive, no electricity solution. Okay? So what can we do? This is the question. Now, the proposal: QED induced EM radiation from body heat in a handheld nano-coated aluminum bowl provides the UVC to disinfect the water. And I'm looking for, so be a little patient. Okay. This is what I'm talking about. This is a drinking bowl of aluminum, as you can see. And in effect, what I'm saying is this picture here. You hold the drinking bowl in your hand, there's water in the bowl, and the UVC comes out of the surface. Okay? Of course, how does that happen? Here, QED is quantum electrodynamics. Richard Feynman, EM electromagnetic, and UVC here is UV at 254 nanometers. Now, the operating principle QED converts body heat from the hand holding the bowl to UVC radiation because the temperature of the nanocoating cannot increase by QM. Now, QM here is quantum mechanics. Nanocoating. If you apply a nanocoating to a surface, you avoid natural convection and you'll conserve the body heat by the emission of QED radiation instead of the usual temperature increase. You know, in heat transfer there are three modes: conduction, radiation, and convection. I'm going to make the proposal that QED is the fourth mode of heat transfer. You can agree or disagree. Here you see a substrate. Here you see the body heat I've been referring to. If you put a macro coating on here, 3, 4 microns, 20 microns, you'll find a temperature increase, and the only way you can get rid of that heat is by natural convection. You all know this. However, if you put a nano coating on, less than 100 nanometers, it's a brand new ball game. There's no temperature increase, and what will happen, you're going to emit radiation, what I call QED radiation. So the nanocoating conserves the body heat without a temperature increase as the radiation bypasses natural convection to enhance heat transfer. Background: Oregon State University in 2010, they put a zinc oxide nanocoating on aluminum and they improved the boiling heat transfer, BHT, by 4 to 10 times. And recently in Korea, the graphene on silicon dioxide improved the BHT 2 times. Theory. Briefly, heat capacity, atom, quantum mechanics and nanotechnology, conservation of energy, electromagnetic confinement. Heat capacity of the atom. Here you see a plot of Planck energy on the ordinate in electron volts versus thermal wavelengths in microns. On the right, you see the KT energy of the atom at room temperature, 0258 electron volts. Now, the white line that goes all the way across, as you can see here, signifies classical physics, molecular dynamics, CONSOL, ANSYS, NASTRAN, all those finite element programs make the assumption that the atom always has heat capacity. Quantum mechanics differs. Here you see the Planck law, about a century old now, and if you plot that out at room temperature, 300 degrees Kelvin, you get this yellow curve. And down to about 30, 40 microns, I think you can see, classical physics and quantum mechanics give about the same heat capacity. However, below that, the quantum mechanical heat capacity basically vanishes. So basically, in nanocoatings, the atom has no heat capacity by quantum mechanics. Now, how about quantum mechanics and nanotechnology? How can I impress upon you the importance of quantum mechanics? You add carbon nanoparticles to molten aluminum in air, the molten aluminum, and you pull it to ambient and take SEM micrographs. This is what you'll see. The black dots here, black areas, are the nanoparticles, and the gray areas are aluminum. Okay? And if you run tensile tests on this material, you'll find a stiffening effect. The material is actually stronger. What you have to ask, however, why did the nanoparticles not combust at 600 degrees C? They should have burned up, but they didn't. And as you can see here, this is what should happen, but it never occurred. As you repeat this experiment for micron-sized porous carbon, what you're going to find is no nanoparticles when you do the SEM. So what is this saying? You have complete nanoparticle combustion when you start off with a large porous micron, but not with nanoparticles. How can you explain that? Well, back to the original picture. And you can see here at the nanoscale, less than 1 micron, there's no heat capacity. And it's hard for a lot of people to understand is why you drop nanoparticles into a molten aluminum bath and they're still there. And the explanation, in my opinion, is quantum mechanics. So quantum mechanics basically precludes atomic heat capacity in nanoparticles. Yep. All right. And here, the basic message is temperature changes do not occur in nanotechnology. There have been a lot of presentations made which basically assume this happens, but it doesn't happen. Okay, if there's no heat capacity, you cannot conserve that energy by an increase in temperature, right? So how do you conserve it? The proposal I like to make is that the absorbed electromagnetic energy is conserved by creating QED radiation inside the nanocoating, and this occurs by frequency up conversion to its electromagnetic resonance. Now, you can have your other idea. You don't have to use this one. But you have to walk around the fact that there's no heat capacity to the atom. Electromagnetic confinement. Now, you all know that nanostructures have high surface-to-volume ratio. You all know this. So what does this mean? The absorbed electromagnetic energy concentrated in the surfaces traps itself to form the electromagnetic confinement. The energy has to go into the surface, high surface to volume ratio. And then QED, Feynman, will convert that trapped energy to standing QED radiation. Here's what I mean. Here's a body, a nanocoating, and the surroundings. It comes into the nanocoating. It goes into the surface because of the high surface-to-volume ratio. There cannot temperature increase because of quantum mechanics. So what does this mean? QED conserves that energy in the surfaces to a standing wave having a wavelength, a thickness equal to the half wavelength. And the QED radiation will come off of that. Okay? Aha, but some may go back into the body, right? But then that's going to be converted to heat. It's not lost. And again, the cycle repeats itself. So basically, QED has almost 100% efficiency. And just in passing, LEDs, it far surpasses LEDs in the UVC. Now, the equations are very simple. The frequency of that radiation is c, the velocity of light divided by the refractive index n divided by the wavelength. And again, the half wavelength is equal to d. And e, the Planck energy of that radiation, is Planck's constant times f. Applications: analysis, coding, selection, body heat, and disinfection dosage. Here you see a plot of QED radiation coming off that coating in microns. And note that this is in microns, not in nanometers. But you see the EUV, extreme ultraviolet, ultraviolet, visible, and infrared. And on the abscissa, you see the coating thickness, D, in nanometers. And if you come across a UVC, 0.254 nanometers, you're going to find you need about 50 nanometers of a coating that has a refractive index close to 2. What I've been using all along since the Oregon State work, I use zinc oxide. And you need a thickness of about 50 nanometers. Okay? Coating selection. Initially, the coating was on an aluminum ball. You can put them on stainless steel as well. But then there's always a question on zinc toxicity, and I've heard both sides of this argument. Some people say it's toxic if it leaches into the water. Other people says it does not. But putting it all aside, I still think zinc oxide is the optimum ball coating. Now, response time, the ball wall is between the hand and the coating, right? And for wall thickness T, the time constant tau, you know all these equations. And for aluminum, you get a response time of 20 milliseconds. Stainless steel, you get about 60 milliseconds. So on a 1 second time scale, and I'll show you a little later, that's pretty fast. Now the body heat upper bound. At 37 degrees C body, ambient at 20, you have a delta T of 17 degrees C. And for body heat, 6 milliwatts per centimeter squared, this is 100 watts over a typical average area of 1.75 square meters. You get this number. But if you take delta T equal that Q times the thickness divided by the thermal conductivity, what you find is that temperatures are very, very small, like 304 and 202 C, which is much less than 17 degrees C. So what this is saying, the heat that's going into the bowl is probably higher than 6 milliwatts per square centimeter. Disinfection dosage. HEW, or UVC light, requires about 16 millijoules per centimeter squared. Now this is millijoules, but they up that to around 38 millijoules per square centimeter. And for body heat of 6 milliwatts per centimeter squared, you have to hold the water in the bowl for say 7 seconds. Here the dose, as you can see, is Q times time. 6 times 7 is 42. That's more than what you need. So the recommendation I've been making all along now is hold the water in a bowl for 10 seconds. This will give you a dosage around 60 millijoules per square centimeter. Now this is a list of all the UV dosages required for... This is 99.9% destruction of all organisms. Now if you look here, you've got to remember the units here are microwatts seconds. Okay, which is a microjoule. And the numbers I've been throwing around up till now is millijoules. So you've got to divide these numbers by 1,000. And you can see all the bacteria, if you hold the bowl in 10 seconds, and you have this much energy dosage available, you're going to disinfect all the bacteria and yeast and most of the spores and viruses. The results, tests are ongoing. I have to do a lot of testing. And then I'm throwing around the idea of getting rid of the nano coating, because in West Africa, 50 nanometers for someone that tries to clean the bowl, he'll probably rip it right off. And I'm leaning towards a Teflon coating, maybe 100 microns thick, with zinc oxide, with 50 nanometer zinc oxide nanoparticles molded into the Teflon. Okay? It's not as efficient as the coating, but it's more practical. And I can't report on any more details at this time. You can find any updates on my homepage. And another reason for coming to Xi'an is, yeah, I think you can see, if I could show this with a lot of experimental data, this is very big. And what I need is collaboration or funding or the combination thereof. And that's kind of why I'm here. If you have any questions and papers, you can reach me at this Gmail. The Gmail doesn't work in China, but whatever, my homepage will come up in China. If you go there, you can see many applications of QED heat transfer, and I think it will convince you that it is perhaps the fourth mode of heat transfer. Well, that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your fascinating talk. I think if the technology matures, it can help a lot of people. So, this would be the objective.
Yeah, again, I think you all can see this. I think you all can see the physics. It's very simple. The standing wave that has to be created, and that really goes back to Planck. He used the same argument a century ago. So, and of course, Feynman, the QED argument, although Feynman went off into analytical oblivion, the fact remains is if you put energy into a quantum mechanical box from sides separated by lambda, you're going to produce radiation of lambda over 2. That's the basic QED argument. You don't have to go into the mathematics any further.
So, are there any questions?
Yeah, any of you? Yeah.
The first question? Yeah.
I met these people earlier. Yeah, what is your comment?
I think I quite make with it's a very, very interesting talk. I like it very much. What I was wondering is a very simple model you show that we have a heater and on top we have a very thin less than 100 nanometer.
Mm-hmm.
And this I think your argument is that what even we heat, it is the all the energy goes from radiation, not really through the layer.
It can't because of quantum mechanics. Yes.
But what if the layer has the other side has a large heat sink? Then that's classical temperature being generated?
The other side has a large heat sink. I don't know what you mean. You have the environment.
Block,
huh?
For example, on top of copper block. But not
I showed it going to the surroundings. Yeah. What are you saying? You put it in a common, in a copper
block, yes.
Well, again, what will happen, you're going to produce the radiation. It will go into the copper block. It will increase the temperature. And this,
yes,
like you are finding.
So I'm wondering if you have a heater and the other is a large, outside is a large heat sink, do we still have a temperature gradient in this even very thin layer? So this is there any experiment saying...
No, there's no gradient.
There's no
heat capacity to the atom.
From your view, I guess feeling there should be a gradient.
No, not at all.
We better agree that maybe after the session you
okay.
Continue.
No, thank you.
Future discussion. So, are there any more questions? So we have now time for two questions, and then we have to go.
Okay. So, to be honest with you, I'm very skeptical of what you just proposed.
Could you also speak up?
Yeah. So, is the second yourself your cooling that can choose why you have the UVC not the material?
Yes, because UVC, if I take 50 nanometers of zinc oxide, which has a refractive index close to 2.5,
right.
2 times 2.5 is 5, 5 times 50 is 250, right. That gives you almost 254 nanometers.
Right. So at one point you mentioned that, you mentioned that when you have carbon nanoparticle on aluminum at a high temperature, you know, you see there's still...
carbon nanoparticle?
Yeah, present there as nanoparticle. But you know, at silicon for some metal, at high temperature, nanoparticle, they grow together.
There's no high temperature.
I mean, you know, you use that, say, that's one of your proofs. You say, this is why nanoparticles are special. I just give
nanoparticles cannot increase in temperature. This came out earlier today in nanomagnetics. Okay? When you try to excite the nanomagnetic particle, most people out there assume that the temperature goes up, but it doesn't. What happens is it produces radiation, just like when you put the nanoparticles in the aluminum.
Right.
That energy still went in there,
right.
But it didn't increase the temperature. So what the nanoparticles did in aluminum, it created radiation. Radiation goes out, it's absorbed in the aluminum. So there's a temperature increase.
That's probably only true with the carbon nanoparticles. If you have silicon nanoparticles, you might have quite different phenomenon.
I use carbon. This work was done at Naval Research, and they spent a lot of time trying to figure that out, why the large porous carbon was never observed in the SCN. I got involved with a company in Ohio who tried to argue that the carbon went into increasing the bond between aluminum. They actually got a patent on this. And when I looked at it, I told them that can't happen. But if you put the nanoparticles in at T equal to zero, they're going to stay there. And when you cool down and run tensile tests, you will find an increase in stiffness. I've done simulations and experiments confirm that. But if you put the porous carbon in, do the same thing, you find no increase in yield strength or temperature. Stress strain curves stay the same.
Thank you, Hammer. We have one last question.
Yeah, please.
Okay. So I also disagree, if you know.
That's fine.
With your idea that nanoparticles don't have any heat capacity and therefore can't heat up effectively. I mean, if that were true, then we wouldn't have the ideal gas law.
No.
Take an ensemble of atoms.
Well, okay, let me answer that. You're coming from the standpoint of statistical mechanics, where you have a large number of very small particles,
right.
And then the temperature in statistical mechanics is treated as it goes up. If you put energy in, the temperature goes up, because that's a statistical mechanical argument. You have a very large number of atoms, molecules.
it's
statistical mechanics.
The atoms moving around faster. So if you have a balloon with gas in it, and you heat up the outside of the balloon, it expands because the gas actually is.
That's right.
Energy.
Because you have many, many.
Are moving around faster. They're hotter.
Because you have many, many particles. You have a very large number. This is the basic assumption in statistical mechanics. You have a very large number of particles.
But it doesn't rely upon interactions between the particles.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Pressure.
Well, I think as a conclusion, maybe, or recommendation, I think what is convincing most data, if you really manage to produce a prototype and have various water samples which are treated in a classical way and which are treated in this way, and you could compare the results by a lab analysis. I think this is what is missing, and I think if it works, then I think all the arguments which we are heard
of course
are maybe a bit diminished. So this would be a recommendation to go really for a water analysis and to have this type of data. But I think the basic idea.
Well, of course, if I had all that data, I think you'd agree, but I don't have the data, and therefore I can't go any further with my argument. But statistical mechanics deals with a large number of particles.
Correct.
And molecular dynamics, which is based on statistical mechanics, you probably know that, is also at fault. When Teller and Metropolis did their work in the 1950s, they used periodic boundary conditions. And when you do that, you're out in the long wavelength range that I showed you, where the atom truly has heat capacity. Of course, it's perfectly valid under periodic boundary conditions. But if you do a discrete simulation, that isn't the case. It's not periodic. And that's where nanotechnology comes in. A nanoparticle by itself cannot have the heat capacity. That's quantum mechanics. Classical physics says, yes, it does. But there's your real argument is, maybe the Planck law is invalid. I've heard that. If the Planck law is invalid, then I agree with you.
Well, the Planck law...
No, thank you.
Yeah, so, thank you, Thomas.
Okay, thank you.
For your talk.